540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A Pennsylvania man is under arrest after allegedly attempting to bring explosives onto a Florida-bound flight. Prosecutors allege that 40-year-old Mark Muffley checked a suitcase onto an Allegiant Air flight at Lehigh Valley Airport in Allentown on Monday. CBS's Jeff Pagase.
According to court documents, Muffley never got on that flight, but he did check one of the bags. A TSA screening found a circular compound, approximately 3 inches in diameter, hidden in the lining of the baggage, with two fuses attached, plus a mixture of flash powder used in commercial-grade fireworks.
The prosecution wraps up its closing arguments in the double murder trial of Alec Murdoch. Prosecutor Creighton Waters says after jurors returned from the Murdoch property, where the defendant's wife and son were found dead in 2021.
There's only one person who had the motive, who had the means, who had the opportunity to commit these crimes, and also whose guilty conduct after these crimes betrays him.
The defense makes its final case tomorrow. In California, the snow keeps coming, with many mountain residents trapped in their homes. Emergency crews in San Bernardino County are trying to get food and medicine to those people. Board of Supervisors Chair Don Rowe.
Plowing is going to continue over the course of the next several days, upwards of a week, back into some of our communities.
Medical licensing officials are cracking down on people with fake nursing credentials. CBS's Matt Piper says it comes after several schools in Florida were accused of selling nearly 8,000 fake nursing diplomas.
Some state officials have all out yanked nursing licenses. In others, charges have been filed against nurses. It comes following Operation Nightingale, what the feds say was a wire fraud scheme in which people paid about $15,000 to get bogus nursing diplomas through last year. The Delaware Board of Nursing annulled 26 licenses. In New York, nearly 1,000 nurses have been told to surrender their licenses or prove they got them legitimately.
A firefighter has died inside a burning building in downtown Buffalo, New York. It happened while fire crews were battling a large fire and explosion inside the building. A bipartisan group of senators introduces legislation aimed at rail safety. It comes after the recent derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. CBS's Nicole Killian.
Ohio Senators J.D. Vance and Sherrod Brown led the effort, along with Pennsylvania's John Fetterman, Bob Casey, and others. The legislation would enhance safety procedures for trains carrying hazardous materials, impose stiffer penalties for rail carriers, and support communities impacted by rail disasters.
Stocks dip on Wall Street. The Dow closed up 5 points, NASDAQ down 76. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin State Supreme Court race is officially the most expensive in U.S. history. Spending by the candidates and outside groups is now at about $18.6 million and counting. The old record was $15 million spent on the Illinois Supreme Court race in 2004. WisPolitics.com reports spending on the race between Dan Kelly and Janet Protasiewicz has more than doubled since last week's primary. Wisconsin lawmakers are looking to make the UW's merit scholarships permanent. Merit scholarships are set to end next month. Lawmakers hold a hearing today on a bill to erase the deadline. UW merit scholarships are worth $5,000. They go to students with excellent grades and test scores. In sports, Marquette beat Butler last night to win the Big East Conference regular season title outright. The Bucks beat Brooklyn to go undefeated in February. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on The Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM.
We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Shocker of all shockers. I know you're going to be just mind blown. It's about the money. I know, right? Boom! It's always been about the money. And look, the bumper sticker for the ages, and thank you, Rupert Murdoch. It's not red or blue, it's green. Yeah, hello. It's always been about the money. And this is one of those moments where you go, everything you see in front of you, all of the political theater of the F channels and all of the outrage candy shoved down your throat by right-wing talk radio, it's about the sale. It's about the money. It's getting you to part with your hard-earned money. It's getting regulators to cheat you out of better wages, hours, conditions. It's about getting lawmakers to ensure that there are no laws put in place that harm the profitability of corporate America that never trickles down to you. Yeah, that's what it's about. Shock. And could this be the moment where there's an awakening? Could this be that moment where people go, oh, that's what he's been talking about all these years? Oh, yeah, it's not about the red hats and the blue hats. It's about the hard hats. Now I'm starting to get it. Yeah, maybe. I'm hoping. And I'm hoping that we start paying better attention. And look, this isn't new, but I do have a new word for some. And I threw this out today and someone was like, what is that? What is that magic that you speak of? Today's word, sophistry. Yes. And it's not a word that I've thought of in a long time. It's an old word. Let's say it's an old word. And it's defined as the use of fallacious arguments, especially with the intention of deceiving. A suitable, tricky, superficially plausible, but generally fallacious method of reasoning. A false argument. Again, it's always been about the money. Come back to this. Whether it was the quote attributed to Jay Gould that he could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half, or Marjorie Three Names and her orchestrated moment of outrage. It's always divide and conquer. And why? Why again? It's the green. It's the money. So when Marjorie Three Names tweeted this out with a video, she tweeted out, listen to this mother who lost two children to fentanyl poisoning. Tell the truth about both her son's murderers because of the Biden administration's refusal to secure our borders and stop the cartels from murdering Americans every day by Chinese fentanyl. And she had this poor woman, and my heart, you know, goes out to her, whose children both took this fentanyl. This Percocet laced with fentanyl is what it was. And they both died in July of 2020. Yeah, you heard me right. They died in July of 2020. This is the problem with our system. Because what Marjorie Three Name said is, Joe Biden did this. It was Joe Biden's fault. Joe Biden's the murderer here. To prove her point. Facts didn't bring that together. That's not the reality, because we know in July of 2020, there was a different president. Biden didn't take office until January 20th of 2021. But, you know, facts be damned. It's the narrative. It's all Joe Biden. It's all the Democrats. And we're gonna take these horribly painful, tragic situations, and we're going to bring this woman in, and she's going to have to relive her pain on a national scale just so Marjorie Three Names can point her finger. And so the Republicans can feel pure that they're fighting the good fight. Now, this is one of those moments where you go, totally dishonest. Why would I believe a word that comes out of a liar's mouth? Yeah, my grandfather always said the last thing you want to be is a liar, cheater, a thief. And sadly, you know, the people that we keep putting on TV, the people we keep getting our quote-unquote news from, fit into some of those categories. And Marjorie Three Names being part of it. Now, President Biden did speak out. He said a little bit more Marjorie Taylor Greene, and we'll have a lot of Republicans running our way. She's amazing, he said. Is she amazing? She was saying that a poor mom lost two kids and that I killed her sons. It's interesting, since that fentanyl that they took came during the last administration. This is one of those moments where the extremism, the hatred, the ends justifying the means puts us in a position. Now, understand, this is supposed to be a statesman. This is supposed to be a congresswoman with the utmost integrity. Someone who has a team of researchers who, quite frankly, easily could have fixed this. But I tell you, they knew and didn't care. Because all you have to do is look at that channel. The F channel that's now in so much trouble that brought us this wonderful quote. It's not about red or blue. It's about green. It's about what sells. It's about selling the outrage candy. And the outrage candy is what it is. Look, she's not alone. It's not just, you know, Marjorie Three Names. I look at James Comer, Republican from Kentucky, who is the chair of the House Oversight and Accountability Committee. One of the most powerful positions in our entire government. He was on some right-wing podcast blathering on about how the U.S. attorney should have gone after Bo Biden. It's not bad enough they're going after Hunter. Let's go after Joe Biden's dead son now. I mean, this is how crazy these folks have gotten. And look, I hope Biden's right. I hope this is far off the beaten path as the Republicans get, that the sane, rational Republicans voters who may be still out there do run. I don't see it, though. I'm just not seeing it because the money keeps flowing. I look at, and this is one of these moments where, again, facts, history, reality, none of that matters. It's about selling the product. And the product is outrage. The product is anger. The product is division. I can easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. Divide and conquer. And why? It's not about red or blue. It's about green. It's about the money. It's about the power, the control. Marjorie Three Names was on the F channel last night with Hannity, going on about the national divorce. And I'm sure you've heard of this. And of course, it's not calling for a civil war. No, no. We just want red states and blue states, and we want them to be completely divided. And again, you know, you want to break up the country? Yes. Yeah, that's what you... But I loved her quote. We're fed up with Democrat policies. We're fed up with the woke ideology being shoved down our throats. And we're tired of our children being brainwashed into these same ideas. We want our own safe space, and we deserve it. And I'm going, wait a second. Weren't you the same people who, when black students said, we want a safe space where we can, you know, we can be ourselves? You mock them as snowflakes? Do I forget this? Is it that I don't have the American amnesia? Maybe I haven't taken enough of the red pill or blue pill. It's quite remarkable. Now, what Marjorie Three Names is really praying for is what they want. They want white America. They want to be able to divide up the country and send the others away and force others away. And what's interesting, what she's talking about, and again, this is where, you know, that public school education of mine, damn that public education. I remember learning about the Articles of Confederation, I think in ninth grade, was it? And how weak this system of governance was, which is why we ended up getting a constitution that they claim they love. Now, remember, they claim to love the constitution. In fact, they carry it with them. It's part of their apparel. It's what they love. That came out of how weak the Articles of Confederation were. What they really want is they want to be able to have mob rule, and they want to have zealotry rule the day, and intolerance and hatred be normal. This is one of those things of, and this is, I don't know where I saw the quote, but I love the line. We're going to be more racist because you won't let us be racist. We're going to be more hateful because you won't let us be hateful. This is who they are. And it comes out in all the things that they keep throwing at us, all of the insane legislation, and we'll talk about some of this throughout the day. But this is kind of frightening in a sense. The hope is that there's going to be an epiphany, that we have that moment of clarity where we go, you know, the music plays, I now see the light, you know, like the Blues Brothers. I see the light. You know, maybe I'm hoping. And maybe it's Rupert Murdoch. It's not red or blue. It's green. It's about the money. Their ideology is total bunk. Let's use that word. You know what I meant, though. Their ideology is simply about more for them and less for working people. And I say this all the time. Republicans hate working people. Look at their policies. Look at what they do. Look at how they divide and for who. And for me, at the end of this, it comes down to some simple stuff. We better wake up. Because the country that we're going to end up with is going to be a very ugly, very hateful, very zealot-filled, rigid kind of place. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got so much to get to. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. Interesting little bit. Evidently, Trump is leading DeSantis. DeSantis has slid in the polling a little bit. And this is one of those things where you got, you know, DeSantis had been leading Trump 45-41. Now Trump leads 47-39. And look, Trump's going to cause a lot of problems for the Republicans because he's all over the place. Day before yesterday, he called for universal tariffs, something that I'll tell you, I'm not opposed to. The idea that, you know, I've always been a big supporter of domestic production for domestic consumption. We need to make things, build things, consume things here at home. And he's calling for this. He's calling for an end to most favored nation status for China. This I'm thrilled with. Republicans not happy. Not happy at all. The party of big business not thrilled because there's a lot of their wealth tied up there. Not to mention, and this is where Trump's going to get himself into some trouble, because the farmer folk know where their bread's buttered. It's in exports to places like China, where China is one of the largest exporters or importers of food on this planet. If we stopped exporting food to China, I saw a guy who said, you know, within a year, he said like 500 million people would starve. And you go, wow. So this is the money maker. And you've got a lot of rural Republicans who are pushing back against this idea, going, no, that's bad. That's our pocketbook. That's our money. Again, it's not red or blue. It's green. It's all about the money. So I find it interesting. Now, again, one of those states that would be hurt by it, Iowa. And you remember we had talked about Iowa's food stamp bill. They were going through their SNAP legislation, and just the insanity that came up. Can't have flavored yogurts, and you know you can only have wheat bread, no white bread for you, because that's for people with actual jobs, or who have jobs that pay enough. It was really just the people sat down and thought this thing through. It was about denying people, you know, I guess, just basic dignity. And my mind goes to this place of, if we got all this food for export, you don't think we could feed people here? You know, we've got childhood hunger right here. We got a president who said in the next 7 years, we're going to end childhood hunger. This should be a national call to action. The problem is our producers see bigger profits elsewhere. You know, there's no real profit in feeding poor children. Here, you know, we get over there, profits to be made. And I look at today. Today is Republican. We love Poor Children Day. Today is the day that the additional money for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the SNAP benefits, ends. This is the day that, because of the COVID bills, the American Rescue Plan, and all of that, there was, you know, money put into increasing the benefit, the SNAP benefit, and making more people eligible. What we're going to see across the board is more people losing their SNAP benefits, and losing portions of it. And what it was, you're talking, I mean, small amounts of money. I saw that it was like 95 bucks a month. And that's going to be taken away. And for a state like Iowa, and this is the weird thing for me, what we know, for every SNAP dollar spent, every SNAP dollar we send out the door in economic activity locally, it's like $1.80. So the reverberation effect in the local economy is fantastic. You want to talk about helping grow an economy, feeding people is a great way to do it. But according to the reports, now you're going to have the average household is going to lose $90 a month. And you go, well, you know, that's only $6 a day. It's not that much. You know, it's only, it's not that much. Only $90. And you go, yeah, it's only $90. And what's going to happen next month, 3 months down the road, is you're going to see the food insecurity rates go through the roof. You know, hunger. When I was a kid, it was hunger. Now it's food insecure. And food banks are going to, again, be at wit's end. We're going to have all of this struggle going on because, again, we can't help those poor people. No. Can't do that. That's bad. And the thing that gets me is the one thing that the pandemic has shown us is how little it takes to get people out of poverty and help them lead better lives. I mean, we're not talking thousands of dollars a month. When at one point where we were giving $250 per kid over the age of six and $300 for under the age of six to help feed the kids, childhood poverty cut in half. This SNAP benefit that they gave to help feed people reduced poverty by an enormous amount. And yet, what you got is you got my Republican friends, and I get this from folks who listen to Outrage Radio. Well, you know, we're going to make them hungry, and they're going to have to go to job, and they're going to work. And the weird thing is, and this is really the twisted, weird, bizarre thing in this, a majority of the people who get food stamps, who get the SNAP benefits, have freaking jobs. Ask that cashier at Walmart. Ask those low-wage workers who are making just minimum wage or just above. Ask them how they put food on the table. And one of the things we've done in this country, and again, it's because, one, we've allowed the labor movement to be weakened, and two, we've got a really divided country. We're willing to let people go hungry in the wealthiest country in the history of civilization at its wealthiest moment. And that's twisted and bizarre to me. And there's no political penalty for this because Republicans do a great job of messaging on this. If you're getting food stamps, you must be lazy. You must not be working. And the reality is a lot of the folks at the bottom, especially families, they're the ones who are collecting. Those are the ones who need the help. They're the ones who need the school lunch programs. And my friend Sammy Sheets, state representative out in Iowa, he, in a bipartisan way, and good on them, have gone and are moving a piece of legislation to help end this idiocy on school lunch programs. I mean, seriously, this is who we are. And again, we talk about budgets being moral documents and these financial decisions being morality. Remember, the party of pro-life, the party of we love the babies, we love me some children. These are the people who are the ones who are demanding that we cut these programs. Now, I go back to, you know, when I was a kid. Look, I'll be quite frank. Clown money food stamps when I was a kid was humiliating. My mother, a single parent, and I were on it, you know, on and off as a single mother. The 1970s were not a good period for single women with children. Always the last hired, first fired. It was always a bad time. And we were on it, and I hated every minute of it, and she hated it even more. It was degrading. It was humiliating. It was all of those things. And I've always been against handout programs. But there is no better alternative to end hunger in this country than ensuring that people have the ability to buy food. And if we're not going to create a program that's going to ensure that people can get high-paying, good-paying, family-sustaining wage jobs so that they can put food on the table, this is the only other alternative at this moment. When we come up with a better one, I will be in favor of that. But for this moment, this is an economic generator of epic proportions. This is a way to kill a bunch of birds with one stone. This is about feeding children, families, safety net, economic activity, helping farmers. We love that. But again, we've got my Republican friends who hate working people, hell-bent on, we got to get them people desperate enough, hungry enough, to go back and work for poverty wages in desperate conditions if they're not already in those desperate conditions. Now, the question is going to become at this moment, you know, how is this going to hurt state budgets? You know, how many states are going to fill that funding gap? How many states are going to try and figure out a way to ensure that, you know, the problems that are going to come are dealt with? We know the red states that Marjorie and her clan want to splinter off, they're going to suffer. The question.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
CBS News Brief. The FBI says 40-year-old Mark Muffley of Pennsylvania makes his first court appearance tomorrow on charges that he checked a bag of explosive material onto a Florida-bound Allegiant Air flight. CBS's Matt Piper.
Court documents say in his bag, a circular compound that was hidden in the lining of the baggage containing a granular type of powder concealed within wax paper and plastic wrap.
Prosecutor Creighton Waters says in his closing argument that disgraced South Carolina attorney Alec Murdoch believed killing his wife and youngest son was the only way out of other trouble. CBS's Nikki Batiste.
He said there was a perfect storm about to collapse on Murdoch, which involved years of lying about an opioid addiction and about millions of dollars Murdoch stole from clients and friends.
In California, just in the past week, the Sierras in California have seen nearly 12 feet of new snow. And in the San Bernardino Mountains east of L.A., many are trapped in their homes. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Shared revenue will go up. Governor Evers making the pledge on Tuesday to the Counties Association that counties and municipalities will finally get the resources they need. The governor's budget devotes 20% of Wisconsin sales tax to funding shared revenue, increasing local government funding by more than $500 million annually. The budget would also allow Milwaukee County to impose an additional 1% sales tax, with half of that new money distributed to the city of Milwaukee. Other counties and cities with populations over 30,000 could also impose an additional 0.5% sales tax if approved by referendum under the governor's proposal, but the Republican co-chairs of the budget committee say they won't support any new taxes. Be careful on the ice. In some parts of Wisconsin, deadlines to remove ice shanties from lakes gets underway today. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
Heat, power, and water are things people cannot take for granted. The elderly, disabled, the veterans. With record increases in basic costs of living, people are struggling to keep these services on and their bills paid. If you are in danger of losing heat, power, or water, call 1-800-506-5596 or apply online at heat.help. You may not ask for it, but the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help.
Earl Ingram.
Mandela Barnes.
Yeah, the stories that I talked about, stories I share, my own personal experience was not much different from the experience from a lot of other people across the state. People generally want to be able to, you know, exist together in harmony.
Working hard every day to inform, enlighten, and bring our community together. The Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings 8 to 11 on Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Norfolk's derail train was made to derail. It pulled 149 cars stretching nearly 2 miles down the track, and it was ill-equipped to detect fires and other problems. This disaster was not an accident. It was mandated by the corporate and government officials now professing outrage.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've said for years, and this is nothing that you haven't already heard, our labor laws are so outdated that anyone consulting for these companies where their employees want to unionize, they want to exercise their right to organize. If you're a consultant, it would actually be malpractice if you didn't tell those employers to fire the most vocal person. Because look, the reality is the penalties are pathetic. And yet here is another in a long, long line of examples. 3 years after being fired, two Philadelphia Starbucks workers are getting their jobs back. Now you've got seven, I guess, from Starbucks in Buffalo getting their jobs back. And what's the punishment? Yeah, they're going to get reinstated. They're going to get made whole, which means whatever they would have earned at Starbucks, they'll get that pay, minus whatever they earned in the interim. And the dreaded, we won't do it again until we do it again. This is why we need major comprehensive labor law reform. And here to share some thoughts on maybe just how bad it is. And if maybe I'm just being too jaded and pessimistic. And here to share some thoughts on if this is a huge win. I've asked my good friend Steve Greenhouse to come talk with us. Steve is a labor journalist, author of numerous books, including the most recent one, Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Stephen, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be on with a good friend of labor, Rick.
I'm looking at this. I'm looking at the story of you've got the Starbucks workers in Philadelphia, the Starbucks workers in Buffalo. They've got their jobs back. The NLRB has come out with this decision that's really scathing. Does it matter?
It matters somewhat. I mean, I think there's so backing up. So. We saw this, inspiring wave of unionization over the past year. You know, Starbucks, Amazon, REI, Chipotle, even Apple. Who ever thought Apple would unionize? And now a Potbelly sandwich shop in Oregon, they're trying to unionize. So, like, there's a lot of excitement. And I've been around a long time, and there's more excitement for unions now than any time in my lifetime. But, Rick, we're seeing this humongous, ferocious pushback by corporations, by Starbucks and Amazon, and many, the NLRB keeps accusing these companies of violating the law to crack down on unions. Some judges have followed up by saying, yes, you're right. This judge's decision today in about Buffalo said that Starbucks was engaged in egregious and widespread violations of the law, ordering the reinstatement of seven workers, ordering reimbursement of 27 workers who were punished improperly, ordering Starbucks to reopen some stores in Buffalo. That's a big deal. That's rare. So you asked me, does this make a difference? I think the case is building against Starbucks about how, I'll use the word, notorious a lawbreaker is. And Bernie Sanders is saying, we want Howard Schultz in the Senate next, to come and face the music.
Right.
So I think, all this kind of is helping maybe turn the tide to put more pressure on Starbucks. And we had this weird thing last week where a federal judge issued an extraordinary cease and desist order against Starbucks saying, thou shalt not break the law. Thou shalt stop firing all these workers for supporting a union. And then mysteriously, the judge reversed himself the next day. And people were so happy when he issued this order. But I think, again, with decisions in the Philadelphia case you just mentioned and the Buffalo case, I think, the evidence is building for a judge to issue a cease and desist order saying, Starbucks, you've been found so often to have illegally fired workers for supporting a union, and yet you continue to do so. So, we need a nationwide order to stop it. So I think the momentum is building. Having said that, I agree fully with you, Rick, that the punishment doesn't fit the crime. I think we're seeing, there have been studies showing that basically 1 in 5 rank and file leaders leading a unionization effort at their company gets fired. And there's really no disincentive for companies not to fire these people because they can't be fined because, as you say, the law is so toothless, the penalties are so paltry. And in my book, Beaten Down, Worked Up, I read about a nursing home worker who was fired for supposedly trying to strangle a nurse. It took 6 years of litigation for federal judges to rule that that is total BS. That story that he tried to strangle a nurse is poppycock. And you think maybe the nursing home would be fined $200, $300, $400, $500, pay years of back pay. You only have to pay $1,500 in back pay because the guy found another job and he didn't lose much money from getting fired. So, you know, without any fines, often with very little back pay, they're really, you know, I think businesses are told by their $1,000 an hour lawyers, anti-union lawyers, you know, it's probably not so bad to break the law and fire these people because that will help crush, cripple the unionization effort.
No. Look, I did organizing years ago, and this is before all of the excitement. And that was the MO back then. You know, they would fire the most vocal organizer, and it would send a chilling effect across the entire unit. And you ended up losing that because, well, the most vocal, most pro-union person was out of the picture. And then, you know, you'd fight for a year, two, three down the road to get them their jobs back, which rarely they ever took back because they found something somewhere else. There was no monetary penalty. But the company, they had the post that dreaded, we won't do it again until next time letter.
So what was one of the unusual and good things about the judge's decision today involving Buffalo is that he said that Howard Schultz himself would either have to speak to the Buffalo workers or do a video kind of apologizing and explaining, read this 14-page letter about how Starbucks egregiously broke the law. You know, I imagine that Starbucks is going to appeal this up to the five-person NLRB, and if the five-person NLRB upholds the judge's opinion, then it will go to the Federal Court of Appeals and maybe the Supreme Court, and maybe in 15 years, if you and I are still alive, Rick, you know, they'll settle this. So it's really, really hard. You know, one of the great things about that almost cease and desist order is, like, if a judge does issue a nationwide cease and desist against Starbucks, and then Starbucks continues to illegally fire them, then you could fine the hell out of them, you know, for being in contempt of court. And then that, even though the National Labor Relations Act doesn't have any real teeth right to fine a company, if they can face contempt for breaking a cease and desist order, then that might make a difference.
See, is there no point in our labor law where you go, you know what, you've been so bad at this, you've broken so many laws, you've done so many egregious things that we're going to impose a contract on you, and there's nothing you can do about it other than sit down and take your medicine?
Your dream? No. I mean, so I just wrote this lengthy story for the Guardian newspaper saying, you know, we've had these huge union successes, you know, remarkable victories over the past, you know, since December 21, when the Starbucks workers first won in Buffalo, and they won at Amazon in April 1st, and they won at REI, and they won at Chipotle in August, and they won at Apple, and you know, these are big deals. But at none of these companies have the workers gotten their first contract. And I interviewed all these, you know, experts, you know, who said even if companies are found to be deliberately dragging their feet, even if they're deliberately acting in bad faith, and the NLRB and federal judges rule that the companies are breaking the law, you still can't require them to reach a contract. You can't require them to make any concessions. So it becomes like a cat chasing its tail, trying to get the the companies to really reach a contract. And that is a big, big problem. And Joe Biden was pushing for this Protecting the Right to Organize Act, you know, this pro-labor legislation, and Bernie Sanders just reintroduced it the other day. And this legislation would do many important things, but two of them would be, it would, you know, if a union wins and after 120 days they still haven't reached a contract, you appoint an arbitrator to basically rule this should be the contract. So instead of workers waiting 2, 3, 4 years to get a first contract, boom, they have a first contract. And I think companies like Starbucks and Amazon realize, if we could drag out ever reaching a first contract for 1 year or 2 years or more, that's really, really going to discourage and deter, you know, workers at non-union Amazons and non-union Starbucks to, like, why should I even bother to unionize? And the other thing about the PRO Act is it would, for the first time, allow the National Labor Relations Board to impose real substantial five-digit, six-digit fines against companies that break the law by, for instance, firing pro-union workers.
Yeah, I'm all in favor of the PRO Act, just like I was in favor of the incremental move forward that the Employee Free Choice Act would have gotten us during the Bush years. We've been talking about this stuff for decades now, and yet we've gotten no further because, as you pointed out, corporate America knows all they've got to do is play out the clock. They got to delay this stuff out and push it off because the next administration might not be as friendly for workers.
This is true. I mean, you know, we have the problem of, you know, so nowadays, what, 70% of the public approve of the union, the highest approval of unions, the highest number since 1965 in 57, 58 years. That's a long time. You know, one in two workers, non-union workers say they'd vote to join a union if they could. Basically, three in four young workers say they'd vote to join a union if they could. People want a union and they want it to be easier to unionize. But when you try to pass a law that would make it easier to unionize, people from a certain party that receive, especially the Republican Party, receive a ton of donations from corporations, they, you know, they're not going to vote to approve the PRO Act or any other legislation that would make it easier to unionize. So it's really hard for labor. I remember Rich Trumka said, you know, there's a real conundrum for the nation's workers. Like, for unions to grow stronger, we need Congress to pass legislation. But Congress won't pass legislation unless unions are stronger to like pressure them to do it. So like we're caught. And it seems that, you know, corporate power, you know, even though, you know, there's such a surge of enthusiasm about unions right now, corporate power keeps growing and growing. And, you know, $1 billion, you know, donations from billionaire groups like the Koch, you know, the Koch Brothers Network, you know, really have a lot of lawmakers, especially Republican lawmakers, dancing to their tune, and they'll vote against anything that would help unions.
Yeah. You know, let me ask you this, though. I mean, because, you know, back, you go back to the before the Depression, the 20s and 30s, you know, there were people who were militant. I mean, you had a much more militant movement of people who weren't in unions, who were fighting the fight. And there are people now who think the National Labor Relations Board and the National Labor Relations Act are outdated and not useful, and that we just need to be building worker power outside of this, because, you know, all of this stuff, we're winning elections, we're just getting anywhere. What do you say to that idea that, you know, maybe we need to just scrap this and move in a different direction?
So, I think the National Labor Relations Act helps in some ways. You know, the Starbucks workers, you know, have unionized at 280 Starbucks. That's good. You know, I think without all the illegalities by Starbucks, we might have seen workers at 1,000 Starbucks unionized by now. And, you know, you're absolutely right, Rick. Many workers were very, very militant in the 1920s and 30s. And they got some results without the National Labor Relations Act. And all their militancy scared a lot of companies. If we got rid of the National Labor Relations Act, you know, I think Americans just aren't militant in the same way as people in the 1920s and 30s were. Workers at least aren't. I think the Proud Boys, unfortunately, are very militant, the Oath Keepers, but that's a whole other thing. So I think the important thing isn't to scrap the National Labor Relations Act, it's somehow to strengthen it. And a big debate right now is because some people saying with Congress, you know, so divided and with the filibuster, it's nearly impossible to strengthen the National Labor Relations Act. So instead, let's somehow find a way to give the blue states more latitude to make it easier for workers to unionize. But that's hard because generally labor relations laws of unionization are done at the federal level, and you have to find a way to prevent federal rules from preempting the states from doing these things. And, you know, a good example, you know, like, so California passed this new law to protect fast food workers, and the unions and the government and business would appoint this a council of 13, 14 members that would make recommendations on improving fast food workers' jobs, on raising their pay. That would make legislations to the legislature. It's sort of a means of collective bargaining, Rick, but it's different. But it would, I think it could be allowed and not be so-called preempted or overruled by federal law. So there's a greater effort to do more on the state level that way.
No, it's going to be an interesting year because there is so much excitement. There's so many big fights coming up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Stephen Greenhouse, labor journalist and author of the book Beaten Down, Worked Up. the past, present, and future of American labor. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at this. But this is going to be an interesting summer because you've got some pretty big labor fights coming up. You've got the Teamsters, you know, negotiating a contract with UPS. You've got the UAW and the auto industry. There's a lot of that, plus all of this organizing going on. So this is kind of going to be like a labor summer, if you will.
Yes. And there's this big labor spring going on that many universities around the country, you know, with all the organizing of grad students and adjunct faculty and some full-time faculty, there are going to be all these teach-ins. So there's something called the labor spring. This being, you know, folks out of Georgetown are the big sponsors. Then I think you're right. There's going to be a very hot labor summer. There really could be a strike by more than 300,000 workers at UPS. And, you know, UPS is trying to, you know, crack down and save money because it's facing intense lower wage competition from FedEx and Amazon. And they say kind of understandably, hey, Teamsters, we love you, but we got to be more competitive. So we got to, you know, cut costs here and there. And Sean O'Brien, the new president of the Teamsters, is saying, you know, we're tired of concessions. You know, we're tired of being pushed around. And you know, someone who's newly elected president of a union often wants to show his mettle, show their mettle, flex their muscles. So, you know, it might be a real fight between this powerful company that says we need to cut costs to remain competitive and this powerful union who says we're not going to swallow any concessions anymore. So it could be a very hot summer.
It's going to be interesting. And as someone who's been a Teamster for over 30 years, it's something I'm watching very closely because a lot of my Teamsters brothers at UPS are saying, you know, the money's one thing, but it's the treatment. It's the constant monitoring. It's the constant harassment. That's the real issue that I hear from most UPS people that I know.
So and now I just wrote this big problem about the increasing problem of high heat for workers, and, you know, not just farm workers, not just construction workers, but UPS drivers. You know, they complain that their trucks aren't air conditioned. And, you know, what's it like making UPS deliveries in Texas or Arizona or Louisiana in July and August? So, like, that's also a hot issue, no pun intended.
But again, it's going to be a very interesting summer. It's one I'm sure that you're going to be on top of, and I hope you'll come back and share some more thoughts. Hope folks will take a look at your book, Beaten Down and Worked Up. Also, the most recent article you got out, Old School Union Busting, How U.S. Corporations Are Quashing the New Wave of Organizing, over at The Guardian. We'll get links out. Stephen, I appreciate the time.
Okay, always good to talk. Be well. Keep it up. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, Stephen Greenhouse. Again, make sure you check out the book. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1900. That was the day the members of the Granite Cutters National Union walked out on strike. Their demands were improved wages and the 8-hour day. The leader of the strike was James Duncan, a Scottish granite cutter. Duncan had been elected granite cutter president in 1885. He was one of the founders of the American Federation of Labor. He served on the AFL's executive committee and was a close personal advisor of AFL president Samuel Gompers. Most of the granite cutters were located in cities on the East Coast. The union's first local was founded in Maine in 1877. Like many skilled trade unions of its day, under Duncan's leadership, the organization did not welcome black members. Duncan actively encouraged employers in the South to hire only white granite cutters. The strike of 1900 lasted until mid-May. It ended with a victory for the union, including the 8-hour workday for every local of granite cutters. Because their skills were often in high demand, tradecraft unions were sometimes able to win concessions from employers on matters of wages, hours, and working conditions. These victories by skilled craftsmen helped pave the way for the 8-hour workday to become the standard workday for all working people in the United States. The union also won a minimum wage standard and grievance procedure. In 1905, the Granite Cutters changed their name to the Granite Cutters International Union. During the 20th century, changes in technology changed the labor of granite cutting. Machines reduced the number of workers. In the 1920s, the union had more than 10,000 members. But by the late 1970s, it had dropped to less than 4,000 members. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Mike Pence did an interview with CBS News, which I found very interesting. He said that he's not going to commit to supporting Donald Trump. He says he thinks different times calls for different leadership. I'm going, wait a second. Hold on. This is the guy who put you out to get murdered. And you're going to say, I think different times call for different leadership. Wow. I mean, and I thought Ted Cruz was bad. I thought Ted Cruz was bad kissing, Trump's behind after Trump called his wife ugly. I thought he was bad. This guy was going to get hung. They locked him out of the building. Wow. It is all about the politics, isn't it? Speaking about all about the politics, I'm sure you saw the story. Eli Lilly today announced that they are going to be capping the price of insulin at $35 a month for everyone. People with private insurance, people with no insurance, everyone gets insulin, $35 a month. It's interesting. And this is, when I saw this, I go, I think it's interesting when the CEO of a company gets a subpoena to testify in front of Bernie Sanders, that amazingly that they decide to do, the right thing. Now, understand, this isn't the benevolence of Eli Lilly. They're not having a good heart. They haven't seen the light. There's no epiphany here. This is purely a strategic decision because insulin is the hotbed drug right now. This is them going, we're going to voluntarily do it. We don't need you to pass legislation. No, don't do that. No, that would be bad, because then maybe you'll go looking at all of the other drugs that we're gouging consumers for. Maybe we'll start looking at every other drug that we're charging, 300, 400 times, what it should cost, what we charge other countries, especially Medicare and Medicaid. This is one of the, again, no benevolence here, no benevolence here. But I do find it interesting, which for me, again, this is one of those moments, been saying it for a long time, saying it for years now. Where maybe Bernie's going to be my Harry Truman. Maybe Bernie's my Truman. Start calling these war profiteers in. Start calling these pandemic profiteers in. Start putting them in the hot seat. You'll start seeing prices come down. You'll start seeing it. Today also, this is one of those moments where I'm torn. Because Republicans put forth this DATA Act, H.R. 1153. That would ban TikTok from all cell phones. I think TikTok is a horrible... I think the fact that the Chinese Communist government has a direct line into our kids is a horrible thing. They've banned TikTok on all government phones. And the logic goes, look, if we banned it on government phones, if it's so bad that the government workers can't have it, why should our kids have it? I kind of agree with that. But here, Republicans have moved this forward. All of the Republicans voted for it. All the Democrats voted against it. And you go, this is how this is going to work. So get ready for the messaging. Democrats want your kids to be controlled by the Chinese Communist government. And that is not at all reality. What the Democrats are saying here is they want to slow things down. They want to have the organization that is generally in charge of this, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, the CFIUS, they want them to move this forward and to do what they do first, and then down the road. Now, me personally, I say you ban the damn thing. And you know, the same thing with when Trump allowed Huawei to continue to sell here in the U.S. We've got to start decoupling from the Chinese having such control of our communications and our infrastructure. That has got to happen, and it's got to happen quickly. And this is a moment. This could be a bipartisan, nonpartisan moment where the reality is yeah, uh-oh. They've got, you know, control of our farmlands, not a lot of it, but they have some of it. They've got control of our manufacturing capacities. They're possibly going to take over Taiwan at some point and have control of how to make semiconductors that we desperately need. This is where the U.S. has got to lift its head up and go, you know, that greed thing, you know, the money thing, you know, the green thing. Maybe we got to start looking at the you and me thing. Enough with the billionaires and the.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.